Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a story that might ring a bell for many, you know, maybe from childhood lessons.
Or just casual mentions, yeah.
Right, the parable of the 10 virgins, or sometimes called the bridesmaids. It's from Matthew chapter 25.
And it's one of those stories that often leaves you with a kind of lingering sense of mystery, doesn't it?
It really does. And we've got a fascinating sermon as our guide today, one that really gets under the skin of this passage. It can be quite perplexing.
That's right. So whether you've spent ages thinking about this parable or maybe you're, you know, almost new to it, our goal isn't just the surface stuff.
No, definitely not.
We want to try and unravel its complexities, look at the historical context, which is so important here, and really grapple with the questions it still sparks today.
Absolutely. Forget the simple be prepared message you might have heard. That's often the first takeaway, isn't it?
It usually is.
But our mission today is to get into the nuances, and we can do that thanks to the insights in this sermon. It shows how much you can miss on a quick read. Our source, just so you know, is a transcribed sermon, and it dives right into what makes parables so, well, captivating, but also sometimes baffling.
Their history, the setting, the layers of meaning.
Yeah.
Parables are kind of like that, aren't they? They seem straightforward on one level.
Yeah.
But then something sticks with you. Something doesn't quite seem to add up.
Totally. So let's see if we can shed some new light on this one.
Let's do it.
Okay. So the sermon starts by laying out the parable. It uses the Message version. That's a more contemporary paraphrase of the Bible.
Right. Easier to grasp the narrative flow sometimes.
So 10 young women, each has an oil lamp. They head out to meet the bridegroom. Five are described as, well, unprepared. They took lamps, but no extra oil.
Okay.
And five are described as well prepared. They brought jars of oil with their lamps.
Got it. Prepared and unprepared.
Then the bridegroom gets delayed. And this is interesting. All 10 of them, prepared and unprepared alike, they all nod off. They fall asleep.
Ah, okay. So it wasn't just the foolish ones who got tired.
Exactly. Then, midnight, there's a shout, he's here.
Yeah.
Everyone wakes up, starts getting their lamps ready.
And cue the problem.
Right. The unprepared women realize their lamps are going out. They ask the others, can we have some of your oil?
And the answer?
Nope. The well-prepared ones say, basically, there might not be enough for all of us. You should go and buy your own.
Buy oil at midnight.
We'll come back to that.
Mm.
So while they're off trying to buy oil, the bridegroom arrives. The ones who are ready join him for the wedding feast. Doors locked.
Oh boy.
Later, the unprepared women get back, knock on the door, and the bridegroom just says, I don't know you.
Ouch.
And the parable ends with this instruction. So stay alert. You have no idea when he might arrive.
Now, right away, the sermon jumps on that common interpretation we mentioned, that it's all just about being personally ready for, say, Jesus's return.
Yeah, the be prepared message.
Right. But the sermon argues it was likely much more grounded for the original audience. It was tied into, you know, social expectations.
Yeah.
The shame involved in failing at a really important role in a wedding.
The social angle.
Exactly. People hearing it then, in that first century context, they might have picked up on something quite different, something more immediate and communal even.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, the context bit. The sermon really hammers this home. You have to try and picture first century Palestinian weddings. It's not like weddings today.
Not at all. A completely different world. For starters, nighttime weddings were normal. They happen in the evening, often after days of celebrating already.
Days, wow, okay.
And crucially, no streetlights. So lamps weren't just decorative, they were essential.
Right, you'd need light.
But these lamps, they weren't like long-lasting lanterns. The sermon describes them as basically rags on a stick dipped in oil.
Rags on a stick.
Yeah, they only burn for a very short time, maybe 15 minutes, half an hour at most.
Whoa, okay, that detail changes everything. Suddenly, having extra oil makes a lot more sense.
It becomes critical, right? And the sermon also clarifies the role of these young women. They weren't just guests. They were groomsmaids.
Groomsmaids? Like bridesmaids, but for the groom.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Their main job was to honor and support the groom. They were supposed to greet him when he arrived in the village.
Okay.
And then escort him with their torches lit, probably first to the bride's house, and then everyone would process together to the groom's house for the big feast.
So a really active role. And the sermon says this was a big honor.
A huge honor. And with that honor came serious responsibility. If your torch went out, if you failed, it wasn't just awkward. It was shameful.
Right. An insult, almost.
A major embarrassment for everyone involved, groom, bride, families. The sermon suggests the original listeners would have been genuinely shocked that any groomsmaid would be unprepared for this. in a small village. That's a big social blunder.
Okay, so let's replay the story with that in mind. The groom is delayed.
Right. And the sermon points out, we don't actually know if delays were unusual then. We shouldn't just slap our modern ideas about punctuality onto it.
Good point. But because of the delay, all 10 fall asleep. The wise, the foolish, everyone.
Which, as you said, complicates that simple wise versus foolish label right at the start. They're all, you know, caught out by the delay initially.
Okay, so they wake up at midnight. He's here. And their torches, they've gone out.
Or maybe just burned really low. They needed relighting, needed that fresh fuel. Now they're scrambling in the dark.
And this is the moment of separation. 5 can relight because they brought extra oil. 5 can't. They start asking the others.
Hmm?
And this is where, according to the sermon, those labels wise and foolish really come into play. And wise, the source suggests it might carry a sense of being like cunning, shrewd.
Cunning, not just sensible.
Yeah, maybe driven partly by a fear of like losing their status, of messing up their role as groomsmaids. Self-preservation, perhaps?
Interesting. Okay, so they refuse to share their reason. Might not be enough for all of us. And then they tell the others to go buy more oil, which the sermon calls, quite rightly, I think, rather absurd.
Yeah. Where are you going to buy oil at midnight in a first century village? It seems ridiculous.
It does. But the unprepared ones panic.
Uh-uh.
Probably because the shame of missing the procession, of not being there with their lamps lit, would be just awful.
So they rush off, presumably on a fool's errand. Meanwhile, the groom shows up. The 5 prepared ones join the procession, lamps blazing. They go to the feast.
And the others arrive later. Knock, knock.
And that cold response, I do not know you. Door stays locked. They're out. Excluded. Disgraced.
And Jesus finishes, the kingdom of God will be like this. Wow. As the sermon points out, this is not exactly a warm, fuzzy story.
Not at all. The sermon really leans into this, saying the parable is meant to, quote, baffle and nerve us, even today. It even mentions feedback from people studying this parable, feelings of, like, smugness from the smart virgins and a real sense of injustice about how it ends.
And you could totally see why people feel that. Those are very understandable reactions. The sermon itself brings up those same questions many of us have, like,
right.
Why such a harsh response at a wedding? Shouldn't weddings be about inclusion? And, you know, questioning the groom's delay, was it his fault? Things went wrong? Maybe blaming him.
Right. Which leads to another really crucial point the sermon makes. We have to be really careful about reading our own sort of 21st century values back into this.
Mm-hmm. Our own lenses.
Yeah, what the sermon calls our liberal, progressive, woke tendencies, whatever you want to call them. We need to question our own perspective just as much as we question the text.
Precisely. That feeling of outrage at the exclusion, the shame, especially at a wedding feast, that might be a very modern Western reaction in some ways.
Uh-huh.
And the sermon acknowledges, yeah, the consequences seem heavy, and it raises big questions about what that exclusion means. Is it temporary, eternal, what's being depicted?
So the sermon then touches on allegory, you know, trying to make everything symbolic. The oil is faith, the groom is Jesus, etc.
Right, that allegorical reading.
But the source kind of warns against being too rigid with that. Don't try to map every single detail. Instead, it argues the real hinge of the parable is the delay of the groom.
The delay.
Okay.
Right, connected to that delay is the theme of judgment.
Yeah. The sermon reminds us Matthew's gospel has a lot of judgment scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But, and this is important, judgment in Matthew isn't just about punishment. It's often about justice, too. About God setting things right.
Ah, okay. So more complex than just reward and punishment.
Possibly. So when we look at the virgins being excluded from the feast, the sermon asks, is it purely punishment? Or does it, in the parable's own logic, represent some kind of failure of justice or order being rectified?
Interesting way to frame it.
And it also says, remember the context in Matthew. Jesus is heading towards Jerusalem. The tone gets more urgent, more focused on judgment in these later chapters.
Right. The stakes are getting higher in the gospel narrative itself.
Exactly. And so to kind of pull it together and get us thinking, the sermon leaves us with some core questions.
Yeah. Questions for reflection. Like, what really made the wise virgins wise? Was it just the oil or something else?
And what made the foolish ones foolish? Was it just forgetfulness or something deeper?
And it asks you, the listener, what questions do you have? What bothers you about this story?
Where do you feel that sense of injustice, or where do you place your indignation?
What does this picture of exclusion make you think about? What even is this wedding banquet supposed to represent?
And ultimately, what kind of judgment is actually being presented here? Lots to chew on.
Definitely not simple answers.
So Wrapping up this deep dive, it's pretty clear, isn't it? This parable is way more than just be ready.
Oh, yeah. Much richer, much more challenging.
It's digging into preparation, sure, but also judgment, the maybe harshness of divine timing, and just how vital that historical and cultural context is.
Absolutely. You strip away that context, you lose so much of the potential meaning.
And those lingering questions the sermon raises, they're really the point, aren't they?
I think so. It's not a parable designed for easy, neat conclusions. It's meant to make us wrestle with it, to avoid those superficial readings.
So here's a final thought for you, building on that. Instead of focusing only on our individual readiness, what might this parable be subtly hinting at about, maybe, community, or our shared responsibility, especially when we're waiting or facing a crisis together? Or perhaps about the unexpected ways things can go wrong, even when we think we're totally prepared.
That adds another layer entirely. Food for thought.